Good evening, Mr. John. Sure. Delighted to have you here.
Yes.
Phil?
That's
it. You have 1 second light. Mr. John is waiting. Here we give you modern food. This is your home away from home. That's what it is. I bet it's very good.
Many Melburnians may recognise that voice. It belongs to Sister Malaspina, the proprietor of Pellegrini's Cafe, who can be recognised as much by his voice as by his collection of distinctive cravats. Hi, welcome to Verbatim. I'm Carl Williams. Pellegrini's Cafe has been serving coffee, cakes and pasta from its location at the top end of Bourke Street for almost 50 years. And today we'll be listening to how Sisto found himself in Melbourne and how it came to be one of the most recognisable faces and voices in Melbourne cafe life.
My name is Sisto, as already have been introduced. I was born in Italy, in a little town by the Adriatic, central North Italy on the east coast. And I came to Australia almost 40 years ago when I was just turned 18.
Yeah.
And I'm still here.
What do you remember about growing up?
Oh, well, I remember many, many things growing up in Italy, in a small city, mostly rural, some industries, railway line with a steam train, fairly large family.
Yeah. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
At six of us, hence my name, Sisto, sixth, the last of the six.
So you were telling me last week that what your family did, or your family background's got a little bit to do with what you're doing now.
Oh, well, yeah. People ask me, you know, why did you choose? I didn't choose to be a restaurant owner or a cafe owner, running a cafe. It just, the cafes and restaurants seems to have chosen me to run them.
Yeah.
So it was basically a natural progress. It's not just my parents only, that within the close range of family there are pastry cooks, cafe owners, even my two brothers are involved in running restaurants. So it's a normal thing. It's not so much that one had to do it. It was a natural thing. For instance, on the pesto day when it was made pesto, it's not like, yeah, you have pesto every day, you have this every day. What happens that you have to help and say, oh, you know, could you go and pick a few of the baby leaves from the basil? Just for the pesto, you know, you can get the baby leaves, the younger ones, because it's sweeter. Another one is perhaps on gnocchi day, which is a quite elaborate dish to make. You got to peel the potatoes. You got to actually, with your hands, roll the gnocchis before they get cut into little dumplings. So this is a little thing that every member of the family helps.
Yeah.
Many hands make light work.
Mm-hmm.
Don't I know, yes.
When did you decide that you wanted to come to Australia?
Well, isn't it funny, you know, in life we seem to do things, and often we didn't make the decision. The decision was made by someone else for us.
Yeah.
How could it be? Yeah, well, it's very simple. Because it was either you go to the National Service and serve the country for 2 years, which I think that's a marvellous idea, but 2 years, I felt it was a bit too long, especially when I was not ambitious, but I wanted to study.
Yeah.
For me, it wasn't enough just to join the army and don't do very much, polish the sergeant's shoes. And so therefore, there was only one choice, and the choice was to come to Australia. Had I not had any brothers here, then I perhaps wouldn't be here now.
Yeah.
I've got two elder brothers here as well, and they came as soon as I turned 18, then you could apply and migrate. All you had to do in there, basically, you had to go for a medical checkup, and they give you the congratulations, welcome to Australia, within very few weeks, because then they did what migrants, and the Australian government was very happy to have young, healthy, willing men to come to Australia, and they didn't have to worry because there was a sponsor here that would actually collect them from the port. So my elder brother came 4 years before me because he's 4 years older than me.
Yeah.
The middle brother came 2 years before me. And as soon as I turned 18, there I was. And I left within about 4 months, I think.
What was the passage like?
Passage was good. Yeah. While you were young, a lot of young people, so it was sensational. We stopped in Naples, then we stopped in Malta, then we stopped in Port Hedon. Fremantle was the place that really captivated me. We got there, it was a beautiful sunny day. I remember walking to a park and there was this beautiful grass. It was like a mat, very thick. And I was wearing sandals, and I took my sandals off, and the grass felt so beautiful. It reminded almost like some villages like in Italy, you know? Different, but there was something about it that unique, maybe because it got that sort of small village atmosphere. I don't know what it was, but I did feel very much at home, almost. Strange, isn't it? I mean, the place that where you were born, especially Italy more so, it's a place that will always be part of us. You know, you never take that away from us. But I, you know, after so many years, I came here as a young person, as obviously I've married an Australian, I've got my own family, so I don't see going back to Italy as going back home. I see going to Italy as my native home. But I see us coming back to Australia as my home. So that's a subtle difference. I spent twice as many years here that I have there, even though my accent wouldn't perhaps tell you so, but that's the reality.
You're with Verbatim on Radio National. Today we're listening to the story of cafe owner Sisto Malaspina, who migrated to Australia from Italy on the good ship Roma and arrived, like so many immigrants to Australia have, at Station Pier in Port Melbourne in October 1964.
Do you have vivid memories of arriving?
Oh, very vivid memories. Oh, yes. I mean, how can you forget that after having been at sea for close to a month? Spring, obviously. And my brothers were there waiting for me, a lot of people. And got into the car, driving through Port Melbourne. Well, I imagine it was Port Melbourne but I do remember taking notice of those beautiful little houses.
The terrace houses?
Terrace houses, and they thought they were so cute. Mind you, then the area wasn't as well kept, as pristine as it is now.
So where did the car with you and your brothers take you, first of all, from Station Pier?
Essendon.
Yeah.
That's the area where the two brothers lived. And I remember in the street there was the most wonderful person. He only had one arm. Mm-hmm. His name was Jim, the first Australian that I met in Australia. My brother knew him, almost a neighbour. And he came over to meet me and to welcome me to Australia. And he said, "Now," said, "young man, you are in Essendon, you are in Australia, you must, not you should, not I would be happy if you did, you must follow and barrack for Essendon." So what chance did I have? Hence the love for my beloved football club. Isn't that amazing? History is very important, isn't it? It's like a tree that you transplant. If it's properly transplanted, it will establish its new roots very quickly, and you find that the new tree will have new leaves, new branches, and there is a similarity why you get someone you transplant it from one place to another.
And what do you see as nurturing you when you first came?
Everything. It just happens. Melbourne Cup was a shock when everybody stopped to listen to our race. And I thought, gee, this is funny. And now, you know, it's part of me.
Yeah.
So I wake up to place a bet. And I remember the very first one, I was on a bus, and the bus stopped, actually, to listen to the race. And but, yeah, that's what makes Australia unique.
Yeah, so Melbourne of the 1960s was a happy place.
Oh, yeah, very happy. Very, very happy. I mean, but Melbourne has always had a feel of a place where you enjoy being. But that's funny. I only remember the best things that happened to me. But I got beautiful memories of Melbourne as a young man because I never felt that I was in the wrong place. I always felt that I was at the right place.
So what did you do when you first came to Melbourne?
I worked in a factory. We were recycling tires, put them through a machine. We had to cut them. And basically, you know, it's funny. It's like making pasta. It was. Because the tires had to go through a circular, so they would cut them. Then from there, we'd go through a machine, and they would shred them. Then it goes to another machine that would actually soften them or melt them. And then you put them through another machine with the two big rollers. It comes out in sheets. Basically, really, it is like making dough.
Yeah.
But instead of making it out of water and flour and eggs or whatever, it was made out of rubber. That only went on for about 6 months that I worked in the factory. And by pure coincidence, my brother knew someone that worked in a reception room called Stenmark. And so, though, you know, we're having a big party there, we need some guys to help us out. So, do you want to come along? So I went along and I was there for many, many years. See, there again, we don't have much saying in what happens to us, do we?
You're listening to the story of Sisto Malaspina, who after a childhood spent at his parents' restaurant in Italy and many years in the hospitality industry, finally took over one of Melbourne's oldest and favourite espresso bars, Pellegrini's, in October 1974.
Well, when was the first time you came into Pellegrini's?
Well, that was actually not long after, because I remember in the summer, because we arrived in the spring in summer, somebody said, let's go and have a gelati. And we came to Pellegrini's for a gelati.
So what were your memories of cafes like Pellegrini's back then?
Well,
were they different?
Yeah, they're very different. The standard was not quite as high, and there weren't very many cafes. Pellegrini's was one of the few established ones. But I do remember going to a few cafes. You had a smaller choice. The quality of the coffees, well, it didn't worry me then. I wasn't a coffee connoisseur.
Mm. Oh, were many Italian espresso bars then more like private clubs?
Well, they weren't, but it looked like if they were, because you have a few old men sitting in the front playing whatever game of cards, and people didn't perhaps feel comfortable to go in. But that didn't offer very much other than coffee and a few stale cakes, really, a few bread rolls. So people didn't have a reason to go there. And, well, it's like Pellegrini's, reputed to be the first cafe in Melbourne. It wasn't, but it was the first one to do the coffees, the cappuccino, properly, the way it should have been done all along. The cakes were made here, baked on the premises, of very high standard, so there wasn't many cafes as such where you go and have a coffee, have a bowl of pasta, and have a homemade gelati, homemade cake. So they, in such a little space, they combined the best of few things, and so therefore you are judged by your standard, really. And so if people remember Pellegrini's as the first one, obviously that was the one to do it correctly.
Yeah, the first good one.
The first good one, yes, that's the word. if a restaurant that hasn't got a cook called the Maria, that's got that beautiful mamma figure. Look at that. Beautiful. Maria. That's authentic. I mean, the lady in the kitchen, she's a magician. With a little stove, older than she is. Which is older, Maria, the stove, or you older than... No, the stove is older, isn't it? And the two of them complement one another, because if the lady would move any faster, the stove wouldn't be able to cope with it, so therefore we call it slow cooking. And the stove, we've still got the original stove there.
So is Maria your wife?
No, Maria. If Maria had been my wife, I would have been the very lucky man. Maria's been cooking here for 25 years.
Yesterday I got the football.
Yesterday you went to the football.
I've been to football. And it hurts my leg.
Solo una Bologna.
What do you think? I'm stupid though?
No, you're very smart, Maria. And beautiful too.
Oh, you're beautiful. You're wonderful. Unbelievable. The boy,
you stir me. When Pellegrini's Boys opened, 1954, they went to this gentleman that had started already, had a coffee roasting company. He said, look, we want something very special. We want, to use an old cliche, Rolls Royce over the coffees.
Yeah.
You know, I want something smooth, something with a body, something pleasant. And so came up with this blend. The boys tasted it. They thought it was terrific. Said, okay, let's call it Brazil Rex. Rex means king in Latin. So king from Brazil. And we're still using the same blend after 49 years. Don't ask me how it's been blended, because nobody would tell. They keep their secrets very closely. It's like Coca-Cola. I mean, I ask them for their recipe.
How do you see changes in coffee tastes in Melbourne since then?
Well, it's improved a lot. We are fortunate that we are in Melbourne and that we have people that are connoisseurs of coffees, because there's so many cafes of so many different backgrounds. And also the water in Melbourne is very good. Now, water is a very, very important part of the coffee making. In 1974, Pellegrini's was as popular as it is now, if not more popular, because there were nowhere else to go. It was Florentino Pellegrini's and a few others, or Chinatown. But the thing that amazes me, that now there are restaurants in every corner of the streets, in every suburbs, regardless whether you got north, east, west, or south, there are cafes everywhere, and Pellegrini's is just as busy.
You're listening to Sisto Malaspina, who's been telling us about his life at Pellegrini's Cafe and the changes in coffee tastes he's seen in Melbourne over the last 39 years.
Cappuccino was the standard way coffee. Then the latte society came along, and there was just a latte, you know, the number one on the chart, followed by a cappuccino. The espresso is maybe fourth or fifth, because then you got the long black, so three. Yeah, the espresso is the number four on the chart. But for every five or six, maybe 10, there is ristretto.
In Italy, isn't the short black or the espresso is much more popular?
In Italy, they got funny ways of doing things, and they think they are the Bible. You know, you drink caffè latte in the morning, cappuccino maybe late morning, espresso the rest of the day. And I do not subscribe to that. I think people should drink their coffees how they like it, the way they like it, when they like it. So I haven't got a problem with someone wanting a cappuccino after dinner.
Yeah.
For the Italians, it would be almost unthinkable. And don't worry, I've had a bit to say when I travel through Italy and I go somewhere and I want a long black. They just don't have to make a long black coffee. It should not be difficult to make I long blacked the way the rest of the world has it.
So when you took over the cafe in 1974, were you concerned about impressing your own style on the place? Or?
No. When we started here, I mean, it was a fairly well-established place. So I credit myself as a very, very good caretaker. And if you look at Pellegrini's, it's unique in a way. We have a lot of unusual things on the shelves and whatever. Well, they are there to make people relax. The moment they walk out of the office, but they come into Pellegrini's, they have to forget about the problems of the office, the computer, the telephones, the mobile. They have to pretend they are in a different part of the world. Totally different. Doesn't essentially have to be Italy. It can be Alice Springs, perhaps. Only on Friday, one of my, should I say, favorite customers, a gentleman from the top end of Collins Street, said to me, you know, this coffee is great, because he has a long macchiato, but we do it with a froth. We do it nicely. Coffee break isn't just food to your stomach. It is for the soul, for your mind, for the eyes. And he said to me, do you know how long it's taken me to get to enjoy your coffee? He said, so that shouldn't be telling you. He said, but I was coming here. He said, more for the experience than the coffee itself. Not because there was something wrong with your coffee. He said, I never used to drink coffee. I still like my Vegemite sandwich very much. To run a cafe, you've got to be naturally generous in your way of you smile, not too much, just enough, but not because you feel that you have to. It should be there as a nature when you see people. But not because they refill your till, but because they patronize you and they enjoy what you're doing for them. And also, if you give them generous meal, now you go somewhere and they give you a little bit of pasta, a little bit of, you go home, you're still angry. Come on, a little bit extra doesn't cost that much. You know, an extra 50 cents, an extra 20 cents, you feed the person. And so you got to be generous. These are some of the recipes for success.
Is that something your family taught you, you think?
My father used to always say, always, you must give before you take. And it is always better to be charitable than be charitable upon. Always. I never forget a few of the little things. And the one should be so lucky to be able to give. And make your coffee. Put my coffee together.
Okay, great.
You've been listening to Verbatim on Radio National. I'm Carl Williams, and I've just been talking to Sisto Malaspina from Melbourne's famous Pellegrini's Cafe. Thanks to Gary Havrilay for technical production.